Welcome back, everybody, to the TV Talk Machine podcast. I'm Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, your host, Chief TV Critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Hello, Jason.
So much to talk about in this episode, and we got to be tight and bright this time too. So it's gonna be a whirlwind. Three TV reviews on the Hollywood Reporter site from you in the last week.
It's a lot.
We gotta break them down. Let's start with a show that I read your review and I was like, what is this show about? And then I got to the part where you said this show doesn't know what it's about, and that is here and now. On HBO, from Alan Ball of 6 Feet Under and True Blood fame, he's back with the Tim Robbins and Holly Hunter. And what is the deal with this? Seems like a whole bunch of ideas just kind of dumped in a pot and stirred around.
Yeah, it is, as they say in the headline, a hot mess. And and that's actually a really good description of it, because It's trying to do a bunch of things. I think what it really kind of wants to do is what it's like to be liberal in Trump America. I think that was the original idea, and then flesh out from there. But it's just, they have, you know, like Holly Hunter and Tim Robbins play this, you know, super liberal. He's a philosopher. She was a therapist who now is involved in this thing called Empathy Project. You can get the hint there. She admits that she's trying to save the world. They met at, surprise, surprise, UC Berkeley. And they live in Portlandia. But as I note, they're not, it's not an episode of Portlandia, although sometimes it seems like that. They adopted three kids from places they had said committed reprehensible things. Vietnam, Liberia, and Colombia. And the children feel like they're being paraded around as progressive symbols. And then they have another child, a very white bread slice, who feels like she's a white bread slice and feels like she needs to act out because of it. So there you go. Hot mess.
Fascinating. your review, so much of your review is sort of like, there's this, and then there's this, and then there's this, and then there's this. And then we get to this point where you say, also, there's like maybe a paranormal.
Oh, yeah.
Aspect?
I forgot to tell you about that. It's not just maybe, there is a paranormal aspect. But you just don't know. Like, I watched the first four episodes, which, believe me, was a thing. And at some point, when all the other, you know, mumble jumbo becomes too much, then the visions that one of the kids is having of this this number 1111, what does 1111 mean, and what are these things happening, and he's having visions, that becomes the thing you say, okay, well, I'll keep watching because of that. And then I can tell you, after four episodes, it doesn't get any closer to where it might be going. So I think at four episodes, which is kind of my definitive cutoff point, I don't know where it's going to go with the paranormal stuff and the visions, the fugue state. And I can't tell, as I said in the review, whether we're supposed to like or not like these people. And I think that's a problem.
So it sounds like, I mean, you said hot mess earlier too. It sounds like there's a lot of interesting stuff in here, and that there's some potential, and there's some richness to this, you know, extremely diverse set of characters and a lot of the topics that are in here. But the question is, like, can it gel into something? Because it after four episodes, you felt like it's just kind of a mess. And you know, do you think there's a chance that it's going to gel into something?
It could. I think, you know, it's Alan Ball. It's going to be this big soapy thing, but it could also be a big soapy, interesting, fun thing. Eventually, it's not fun at the beginning, I can tell you that. I think that they misinterpreted whether these people, they wanted to have these kids be acting out. They're adults. I shouldn't call them kids. They're adopted, but they're all like adults now. They were little kids, and now they're all like grown. And one of them has a daughter, etc. So you, and there's good things here. The youngest kid from the one who's having the visions, he's gay. His relationship with his partner is interesting. There's a Muslim therapist in his family is really interesting. So those things could get better. It's just that the core family is not there. And again, Jason, I always measure this against everything else. Like, if you feel after four episodes that you don't like people you're supposed to like, or at least the bulk of them, certainly not in the main family except for one person, and the conceptual twist is not as interesting or is dragging on longer than you want. I think you have to cut bait. I really do. So that's my feeling.
And then the elevator pitch for this show does sound to be, and you mentioned this high up in your review, which is it's kind of like This Is Us, but it's HBO. So there's sex and also apparently a supernatural element of mystery. So, you know, interesting. I mean, This Is Us is a popular show, right?
It's so popular, yeah.
Not a bad play here, but it's interesting. It seems messy, fascinating.
It could work, but but for that audience, for that This Is Us audience, I think, yeah.
All right, let's talk about a show that I'm excited about, and it turns out you're kind of excited about it too, which is Altered Carbon, it's on Netflix, and it's based on a novel that I read, although I essentially don't remember anything beyond the premise in the novel. Mm-hmm. I did read the novel, and, you know, I knew they were making this, and I just thought it was going to be like another one of these slide it in there kind of mid-priced sci-fi shows. And it turns out that by all accounts, including your review, no, this is Netflix like really tackling full-on like widescreen epic. You know, this is trying for something a lot bigger than just kind of a modest mid-price science fiction entertainment. This is like, what if we just made Blade Runner the TV show, basically?
Basically, that's probably the best description of it. It's beautiful to look at. They poured a lot of money into it. They're not really talking about it, you know? I saw a story from THR where the woman who created the show and is the showrunner kind of laughed when it was suggested that there were $7 million an episode. So, but not sure if she laughed that that's not enough or too much. So I would probably peg it a minimum like $5 million an episode probably. So this is a pretty big, you know, and that's, it could be higher, who knows. But you can see it on the screen. I think it's fun. I think it's crazy ambitious. There's unbelievable mythology here. You read the book, although you don't remember much, but, you know, just conceptually the idea of the show is pretty complicated. But once it's in execution, you know, look, it's very Blade Runner-esque. There's no getting around that, but it's
watched the first like 20 minutes of it, and I think they do a really, I mean, it's tough because you got to do a download of a premise like this, but I think they do a really good job of getting quick to the details here, which, I mean, there is that scene where they're basically a hologram explains to everybody about what's going on in the world around you, but the idea is just that everybody's brains are on little chips essentially, and so they can be stuck in any body, and the rich people get the good bodies and the poor people get whatever their bodies they're given. And, you know, our protagonist, which is Takeshi Kovacs, who is a guy who is a bad guy. He's done a lot of bad stuff, and he's been kind of, and this is the, it's like, I love the mixing of the sci-fi and the noir element, because he's been, a rich person has basically brought him out of cold storage for his crimes in order to solve a murder, which is a very noir kind of storyline wrapped in this crazy sci-fi world. So it's, you know, they get to that pretty fast. Like in the first episode, you're kind of understanding what's going on, but the visuals are bananas. Like, that's the thing. Like, there's a shot of them like going over San Francisco Bay that it's just like, it looks like it's in a movie, except they didn't need to do that shot, right? They could have just showed the people riding on their little thing, or not even showed them riding, and they just get to their destination. They're like, no, we're gonna spend the money on this really amazing shot of far future San Francisco.
Yeah, and they do a number of really interesting things. That's why I think that the money is there. It's on the screen. And they don't just show, like, I mean, I think I found a surprise in pretty much every episode as far as like a shot that I thought, oh, that's really interesting. They even ratchet it back, because they're funny. I think you would like this part. There's kind of an ongoing smirk about old tech. Like, AI is so old that they're like floppy disks, you know, like, and so there's like all the AI people are like, they feel left out. And, you know, beyond that, there's even a much more progressive tech, which is also outdated. So there's kind of tech smirk, which is kind of funny. But there is, and then there's a nostalgia for some things that people remember, which goes back in time. There's a scene where one of the characters needs to go back into this trapped game-like existence to find his daughter, and the visuals of how they made that look on the screen are, it's unbelievable. It's I don't know. All I can tell you is, like, if you ever played a game in like 1978 or something, it probably looks like that inside of a computer or Atari headquarters somewhere. Mm-hmm. Someone had something like that going, and it's just, and then you come out of it into this glistening, you know, the world was San Francisco where they're stationed. And, you know, they do get a lot of the San Francisco references correct, I should say, that much. The very few that they use. But it is Blade Runner-esque. It's beautiful, tall buildings, tons of neon, flying cars, really interesting, like, gritty street life. And then they have a whole thing called the Aerie or whatever, where they all the rich people live, which is the highest blockbusters in the sky above the clouds. Yeah, a lot of money went into this. And I would say that I loved it. Like, I was all in, not because I thought it was, like, super, and it's creative, but, like, you know, I really think on some level Counterpart is surprisingly creative. This one I feel like it's got a lot of mythology to work with, but at the gist of this show, it's fun. It's smart fun, and you want to watch the next episode immediately. So that's good.
Well, and I sit up and take notice whenever you watch a sci-fi show and come away feeling, or a fantasy show, and come away feeling positive about it, right? Because, and as you say here, this is sci-fi for the masses, and that's, I think that's a good sign, right? Like, this is not just something that's going to speak to people like me who will sort of track down any sci-fi show that he can find and then hope that it's good, or at least okay. This is something that they're taking, I don't know how it'll work, but that they seem like they're taking a shot at being a breakout, you know, breakout franchise for them in a way that Game of Thrones was for, and Westworld for. I had a real Westworld vibe at the beginning too. Like, we're going to spend money to let you understand what this world is like, and we're going to spend the time and the money to get you into it. And that really reminded me of how Westworld unfolds.
It, absolutely, it's you know, and the thing about it that I like, there's two things. You talked about, like, it just rushes right into it. What I like about it is, if you've read the book and you're kind of a sci-fi person and you kind of get conceptually the idea of all these gimmicks that they have, it rushes right into it. So if you're a book reader and you love this book, it's not going to take any shortcuts. What it does, though, is, so that person gets immediately hooked. But what it does, though, is it circles back to these ideas that the layperson, let's say, who hasn't read the book, needs to understand, but it doesn't hit you over the head with an anvil. And I thought that, more than anything, was the most creative thing about it, because, you know, they call bodies sleeves, right? They call this little disc that they put in everybody's back of their neck at age one. It's called a stack. It's your mind. It's all of your brain and your mind, and everything that you, all your memories are stored in this thing called a stack. And if you die, you can be, quote unquote, spun up into a new sleeve, and your stack is just replacing that. But the beautiful thing about this series, it's a very class based. So, like, if you die in an automobile accident, or if the government accidentally kills you or something, the government gives you a sleeve. But because you're what they call a grounder, one of these, like, low level people, you could get anything. Like, there's a scene at the beginning which I thought was really good. Like, three-year-old girl comes back as, like, a 68-year-old woman.
Right, because, you know, that's the free body that they happen to have.
That's
and you
all
just
they
take
have.
What you get. Yeah.
Yeah. So you can, and then you can buy, you know, there's black market sleeves. You can buy sleeves, if you're a designer, sleeves, if you live up there. You know, the idea of, like, the sack and the spinning up, and there's a whole thing where if you're Catholic, they refuse to give the government the right to be spun back up again. So when you're dead, you're dead. There's religious elements to this. It is a full on, well thought out mythology. And the person who created this series, what she does note is that in the first 10 episodes, they barely touch the surface of the first book. Hmm. And I guess they end up being three total, this being the best one. But she's already said that she can see, you know, 10 seasons of this if they wanted to do it. So that's pretty interesting.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to watching it. I didn't understand just quite what the scope was, but then having watched the first 15, 20 minutes, I was like, oh, I see.
But isn't that so Netflix, though, right? Like,
I know, right?
Netflix works on things in like, you know, private, basically. They tell you who got cast and everything, and then, you know, a year and a half later, you've forgotten about it, and then they drop all 10 episodes, and you're like, whoa, this is really expensive. This is like, hey, this isn't just like a show you guys dropped. This isn't like the end of the effing world, but this is like a blockbuster. And so, you know, who knows? I don't know how Netflix does their business sometimes, but I'm really appreciative to get something this big and this ambitious.
That's cool. All right. Well, now we have to talk about what Amazon is doing. Meanwhile, Amazon has a show called Absentia. That your bottom line review is no.
Yes, just you should be absent from that. I think you should be in absentia from absentia.
So
I don't know.
So it's the lady from Castle.
Yes,
Stana Katic.
Stana Katic, and yeah,
and the premise is she okay. Let me just walk through it.
Okay,
see if I got
you
this
do
right.
This. Okay,
because I haven't seen it, but I read your review. So she and her husband are FBI agents.
Yes,
and then one day she is kidnapped and put in a box where water is flooded in and periodically drained, and there's a crazy killer person who is
in a mask
who is. And it's creepy. 6 years pass, and her husband is remarried. She's presumed dead, and he gets a phone call saying, "She's alive, come and get her," or something to that degree.
Yes, exactly, and kind of that voice, even.
And she, well, I mean, of course. Right. And so then she has to, obviously, the thing is, there's mystery about, like, why she was taken and all of that, so it's like almost like a blacklist element. And then there's also the idea that she's been pulled out of her life, and everybody else's lives have gone on, and she was missing. She's in absentia during that time. So there's a mystery element and there's a crime fighting element. And then I'm leaving out the most important element, which you went on about at detail and made me laugh at several points, which is that it's all taking place in Boston, but they shot it in Bulgaria.
There's not one shot that looks like Boston. Like, not one. There is not one there's not one Boston accent. Oh,
the line that made me laugh out loud in your review was, "Nick has married Alice, and she has helped raise the boy, now 8. Life in Bulgaria is good."
I know they're going to be all mad.
They're going to be mad. They're going to be mad at you. They are. Sorry, Bulgaria.
But you know what? In Amazon's defense, because I like the fact that they have good stuff coming up. In their defense, they just bought this. They just bought it and put it on. Maybe they thought there was a slowdown in the pipeline. It doesn't make sense to me because it dilutes the brand. But it's not a very good show, and you can totally pass.
It sounds like this is stylistically. I got echoes of you talking about, what's the name of it? It's right on the tip of my tongue. Another show that Amazon has done that your response was kind of like, this is like a network TV show. Why is this on Amazon?
Yes. You're talking about Bosch?
Bosch. That's it. Bosch.
Yeah.
It struck me as a little like that. Like, what you're describing here is kind of like The Blacklist.
Yes.
But it's on Amazon.
Oh, but yeah, but just trust me, Bosch is like a million times better than this.
Okay,
this,
well, there you go. So if you want to watch something conventional on Amazon, consider Bosch. If you want to watch something unconventional, I don't know, Sad Spies is available. It's listed under Patriot, but remember, it's really called Sad Spies. Lots of things on there.
Lots of things, but Absentia.
Yeah.
Unless you really like people making terrible, terrible decisions that are so obvious that they shouldn't make, like going to visit the serial killer who allegedly killed you
with no
by
backup.
Yourself into his apartment.
Yeah, that sounds, the story checks out. Sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, with no gun.
Yeah. In Bulgaria.
Back Bay, Bulgaria. Okay.
That's right.
Moving on.
The Fenway Park is open now for the baseball. Should we go over there to the Fenway Park? I want to do a couple letters before we go.
Because
we are being tight and bright here.
We are.
TJ in the 519 wrote in, as a Canadian, we were talking about bad titles for TV shows, right? And I knew we were going to forget some. TJ wrote in, as a Canadian, the title of the show The Americans put me off. It was only due to the urging of the good old Firewall and Iceberg podcast that I gave it a try. It's been my favorite show ever since. So I tried out Patriot, but quit in the second episode. But seeing how high it was on Tim's rankings and Jason's conversion, I went back and I'm enjoying it immensely. So, okay, The Americans, that's an interesting read. Like, I got that, but if you're not an American, it's different. And then I want to thank Chris on Twitter, who wrote in to say, guys, a TV show held back by a bad title, surely Cougar Town is the epitome of this.
Yeah,
and I said, you win, Chris.
Smart.
You win.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Cougar Town. That was like it, and they knew it immediately. They knew it,
yeah,
but it was too late.
Mm-hmm.
That was Bill Lawrence, right? He was like, oh boy, we gotta live with it.
They just, yeah, and we missed it. We blew it. Yep.
So nice one from Art from the 425, who said, just to be clear, I can watch the first two seasons of Detectorists on either Amazon Prime or Netflix, which I have, and I can get hooked on the series, which I am. Now, season three comes out on a different service that I don't have, and I can't bundle it with Netflix, but I can bundle it with Amazon if I want to pay more, which I don't. I'm just observing my little sphere of friends and family says the frustration and confusion over fractured streaming services is an all-time high, and it seems like there's a lot more pain to get through before it starts to resolve. Anyway, thanks to both of you for keeping us entertained and informed, and remember the greatest single line Detectorist has produced. Those nostalgia conferences these days aren't what they used to be. It's true. It's very solid. Yeah, there's a lot more pain to come because we're only getting started. And I think in the end, there won't be as much pain because in the end, everybody will just pay for the streaming services they want. But right now, you're paying for cable and you're paying for streaming services. And it feels like there's just a money transfer is going to happen at some point. And the traditional cable bundle is kind of going to fade away and you'll just have your bundles of streaming services. But right now it's the gold rush, right? Everybody's going to try to charge you $10 a month. Like, and there's too many and you're not going to be able to get them all. Like, you're just not. And that's just how it is.
Yeah, it's I mean, but we're going in that direction, right? I mean, like, if people don't think that streaming is the future, they need to wake up.
Yeah, but it's just we get used to like wanting to be able to get everything we want to see, and I get the frustration, but I feel like this is what it's going to be. It is, as Art said, a lot more pain to get through before it starts to resolve. I think it will resolve, but it's going to be a while.
Yeah.
Okay, here's a good one from a name that I haven't heard before, but it's a great one. It's Indoors Dave from the 417. Indoors Dave. It's Missouri.
Love it.
It's like southwestern Missouri, Branson, yeah. and other places down there. Indoors. He's indoors, though. It doesn't matter.
Indoors Dave.
Indoors Dave says, could either of you explain why I need to log in via a TV provider to watch a network app that I can get for free via an antenna? I like to watch award shows, but it seems crazy that I got to buy an antenna to do it. Keep doing the Lord's work, Indoors Dave. I can answer this question.
Yeah, go for it.
The public airwaves, the networks have to put things on the airwaves. For all other reasons, you got to pay them. Like, I mean, I think it's that simple, which is there's no regulation that says something you put out over the public airwaves, you have to give away in any other form. And this is, they make a lot of money from getting paid to be carried on cable and satellite, either directly or indirectly by making deals that put their cable channels on those providers. There's money to be made. And like the streaming, and you could argue the streaming infrastructure and all of that is, it costs money to stream video. And, you know, just because they've got it on the air on the free airwaves doesn't mean that you have the right to it using, you know, their servers and their streams. So they want money. And the only place where they are not allowed to charge you is over the air. So they're going to charge you everywhere else. And that means, you know, having a cable login. That's just it. Bottom line.
Yeah. Yeah.
The money, boy, a lot of money questions here. A lot of money comments.
A lot of money questions.
Here's a great one. next to last, this is our friend Yehuda again in the plus 41, which is Switzerland, I want to say. And he says, I'm circling back to an old subject. Seems things are changing in basic cable finally. Sci-Fi and USA are allowing the F word on the air. Who knows? Maybe one day you won't even have to check the box. Well, that's not true because they are rated TVMA, these shows that have the F word in them. And checking the box, we're allowed to check the box whenever we want, but the box just puts a flag on it that says that it's explicit. That's all it
right.
is. Anyway, I noticed this too, so I'm glad Yehuda wrote in. The new season of The Magicians came out, and all of those F-bombs that used to be dipped are no longer being dipped. They have embraced the F-bombs, and it's much better for it. I actually ended up watching the last three episodes of last season of The Magicians off of iTunes because I got tired of hearing the audio drop out, and I just wanted to hear the full-on swearing. So now I can go back to just watching it on Sci-Fi.
There you go.
It's good. Yeah. It's time. It's fine. It's good. There was a BuzzFeed article about this where they quoted John Landgraf as well as sort of saying, like, you know, that they were going to embrace it and rate a TVMA for the FX stuff. And it was fine. They're like, that's the world we live in. Then you look at the rating. Like, if it's a TVMA, it's going to have with the L, it's going to have language. And that's just how it is.
And they've been doing it for a long time, although for the longest time they didn't have swear words in Sons of Anarchy. But I retweeted a story from Michael Schneider from IndieWire, because I thought he did a great job on putting that whole thing into context and getting quotes from people about why they did it, and the showrunner from Magicians. It was really well done.
All right, I will I'll look for that one and put it in the show notes. Okay, we've got one more, which is from Andrew from the Plus 6-1.
Okay, Andrew.
So this is Australia. It's an Australia letter. And this is going to wrap us up.
Is it going to be that kangaroo that comes off and knocks the guy off of the bike? I saw that.
I did. Yeah. I did. I think I tweeted that out from the TV Talk Machine account. There was a video that I put out there that I retweeted, and it is literally these guys are riding their bikes down a road in Australia.
In a race. Mm-hmm.
And a kangaroo just jumps out and smashes one guy into the ground.
Yeah, right in the head. Knocks him out cold.
Mm-hmm.
Never going there. Sorry, Australia.
So here it is, Andrew. Thank you, thank you, thank you for Detectorists. Words cannot describe the beauty of this show. As I burned through the three seasons, I became more overwhelmed by the knowledge that as the last episode approached, I would have to say goodbye to characters whom I genuinely began to feel were friends. It almost inspired me to buy a detector. But, well, Australia, best to stay indoors. Keep up the good work, Andrew from the Plus 6-1.
Yeah. He should be indoors, Andrew.
Indoors, ta-da, Andrew. Listen to indoors, yes. Dave. Just stay, remain indoors. Remain indoors, yes, in Australia.
Exactly. Shelter in place.
That's right.
All of Australia, please, that's shelter,
right,
in place.
That's right. Forever. Drop bears to the left of me, kangaroos to the right. Snakes flying out of the water. Anything can happen.
Anything.
Oh, all right. Well, that's it. That's our Titan Bright Friday show this time, because we got other stuff going on. But
I got a roll and rumble. But man, I got three reviews up there you can read. So
yeah,
there you go.
Look at that. Mm-hmm. So the links in the show notes. Tweet at us at TVTM podcast at TVTalkMachine.com for your emails. And we'll see you next week. Tim, until then, have a good weekend.
Thanks, Jason.